Join acclaimed journalist and author Sasha Abramski in conversation with me, Robert Jones, live at the KZFR studios Wednesday, June 3rd, for a timely discussion of his latest book, American Carnage: How Trump, Musk, and Doge Butchered the U.S. Government.
I told the story of what was happening to these men and women who, through no fault of their own, were suddenly being labeled the enemy from within and were seeing their professional lives and oftentimes their personal lives upended by a billionaire oligarchy that was seizing control of the U.S. government.
A weekly columnist for The Nation magazine and author of 11 books, Sasha Abramski is one of the most important voices on the American left. This live event will include a reading, discussion, and Q&A, followed by a book signing. To join our studio audience, visit kzfr.org/events.
When the Trump era is over, I do think that it provides room for a reimagining of what America is, or maybe more importantly, what it can be.
Sasha Abramski, live and in person, Wednesday, June 3rd, from 6 to 7:30 at the KZFR studios. This event is free and open to the public, but seating is limited. To register, visit kzfr.org/events.
Welcome back to Zephyr News, a weekly production of FM 90.1, KZFR, Chico. Zephyr News is broadcast each Thursday evening from 7 to 7:30 p.m. This week's show features a contribution from the California Report. Segments from KZFR community members include a segment on the Orville Table Mountain Lighting Project by Mary Tribby, a piece on the Glassy-Winged Sharpshooter by Hope Rihanna Campbell, an exciting excerpt from the Butte Views and Beyond show, coverage of the Butte County Board of Supervisors meeting by Hope Rihanna Campbell, and a local news summary by David Fitz.
Zephyr News reporter Mary Tribby recently spoke to Dean Gurr, chair of the Oroville Lights Committee, about the project to illuminate Table Mountain Bridge. Here's her report.
This coming Saturday, May 30th, the historic Table Mountain Bridge in Oroville will be lighted by full-color programmable lights. The public is invited to this historic light show, which will showcase the different capabilities of the lights and will be repeated every 15 minutes. The light show will start at 9 p.m. and end at 10:30 p.m. Saturday's light show reflects many years of work by the Oroville Lights Project to design and install the lights, and also reflects many contributions from individuals, community groups, and businesses to fund and implement the project. Table Mountain Bridge was originally a wooden-covered bridge. It was washed away many, many times by the Feather River before the current iteration was built in 1907. The bridge served automobiles until 1982, when it was converted to a walking bridge. Table Mountain Bridge was first lighted with electric lights in the early 1900s as part of the Oroville Water Carnival. The carnival was held to celebrate the rich resource of the Feather River that flowed through the community, and Table Mountain Bridge was the centerpiece of the celebration. The bridge was last lighted in 1913. Dean Gurr, longtime resident of Oroville, serves as the Oroville Lights Project Chair and has been the primary force behind the current lighting of the bridge. KZFR interviewed Gurr and learned that a few years ago, he was walking along the Feather River with his wife, Monique. They looked at the bridge at dusk and said, "Wouldn't it be wonderful to see that lighted up?" Gurr said, "In my discovery phase, I found out that many people along the way have known about the previous lighting by the Water Carnival, and that many others had also had that idea." Gurr, however, a past president of the Rotary Club of Oroville, considered the lighting of the bridge to be an opportunity for the club to mark its 100th anniversary and honor Oroville's past. Gurr was instrumental in the club's choice of Oroville Lights as the club's signature centennial project, gaining the support of and funding from his club, the Oroville Sunrise Rotary Club, and Rotary International District 5180. This is the first of three phases of lighting the bridge. The remaining phases will be to light the overhead trusses and the east side of the bridge. It has taken 4 years to fully fund the lighting of the west side of the bridge. 1,430 individual LED nodes have been installed along the entire span of the bridge, along the upper arches and the top one-third of the vertical columns. 25 LED floodlights illuminate upward from the base of those columns for lighting consistency, and the piers of the bridge are lit by 12 LED floods. Gurr said, "We had estimates as high as $3.5 million to light the bridge, but we've kept the cost down to $550,000 to light the west side, which includes the lights, infrastructure, and installation. In total, Rotary clubs, Rotarians, and Rotary-affiliated businesses provided 43% of the funding. Community donations from businesses, organizations, and individuals provided 30%, and the remaining 27% came from a grant from the Department of Water Resources. Some of the individuals, community groups, and businesses that contributed to the lights include the Oroville Arts Commission, Mike Ramsey, Rich Sutherland, Creative Imaging, Cal Water, Moortown Rancheria, Taco Bell, Recology, and Explore Butte County. A complete list of donors can be found at the project's website at orovillelights.com. The light show on the Table Mountain Bridge on Saturday will be designed to showcase all the different capabilities of the lights. Gurr described his vision for community use of the lights on the bridge going forward.
So one of the things that we designed this for, when we went into it, we were thinking that we're just going to put on static white lights,
yeah,
just like they did, yeah, in the early 1900s. But it expanded into this living, breathing, full color, programmable,
yeah,
show capable of light performances. And we will, yeah, have light performances periodically to celebrate holidays and
okay,
events in the community. However, individuals can rent the bridge, if
okay,
you will, or pay for a
okay
light show, which will help with the ongoing costs of the bridge.
Yeah.
And they can do birthdays, anniversaries, gender reveal, which I'm looking forward to our first gender reveal when the bridge flashes back and forth, pink to blue, and we light it up at the end to reveal the child's
right
gender.
Okay.
And then we're looking forward to a light show on the bell game, or rival football game between
oh
Oroville and Las Plumas.
Oh.
We'll light it up half red, half purple. And as the team, whoever wins, gets to light it up for the night with a light show.
That's a great idea.
So the boosters might want to get in on that.
Yep.
There's a lot we can do with it.
Gurr also said that the project has plans to work with some of the local school STEM programs to give students an opportunity to learn how to program the lights. We've been told there are several good places to watch the Table Mountain Bridge light show. You can see the lights from the fish hatchery side of the bridge on the north side, where there is a large parking lot, from the south side of the levee, from the pedestrian and bike path that goes along the river, and from right behind the Veterans Memorial Hall. Gurr cautions, if you choose to view from the Veterans Memorial Park right next door to the Vets Hall, please remember it is a place of remembrance. This first public display of the lights on Table Mountain Bridge will begin at 9 and end at 10:30 p.m. on Saturday. This is Mary Tribby for KCFR News.
This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News. A tiny insect is causing big concerns across Northern California's wine country after state agricultural officials confirmed the discovery of the glassy-winged sharpshooter on grapevine plants, sold at several Costco locations, including stores serving the North State. Officials in Butte and Napa counties are now urging residents who purchased grape plants from Costco during April and May to inspect them closely for signs of the pest. The glassy-winged sharpshooter may sound unfamiliar to most people, but for California's wine industry, it's a serious threat. The insect feeds on plant fluids and is known for spreading a dangerous bacteria called Pierce's disease. That disease can kill grapevines and has caused major damage to vineyards in parts of California in the past. In Chico Enterprise Record, Edward Booth states that Butte County Agricultural Commissioner Catherine Quist said Tuesday that the Chico Costco confirmed it sold about 200 of the grapevine plants since April 21st, when the first glassy-winged sharpshooter was reported. County officials are asking residents not to panic, but to be careful to take a look at any grapevine plants they purchased this spring. The sharpshooter itself is about half an inch long, dark brown to black in color, with clear wings and a small light-colored spots on its body. The insect can move quickly and often hides underneath leaves or along stems. Agricultural experts say the real danger isn't just the bug itself, it's the bacteria that insects can carry from one plant to another. Once Pierce's disease infects a grapevine, there's no cure. Leaves begin to dry out, fruit shrivels, and eventually the vine dies. For vineyards, especially smaller family-run operations, that can mean significant financial losses. In Butte County, agricultural officials are now coming together with state agencies to track where the infected plants may have been distributed. Residents who purchased grapevine plants from Costco in April or May are encouraged to inspect the plants carefully and report anything suspicious to their county agricultural commissioner's office. Some experts say there's like a few warning signs people can look out for on the plants themselves. Leaves may show yellowing or browning around the edges, and vines may appear stressed even with regular watering. However, officials say some infected plants may not show symptoms immediately, which is why inspections are very important. County officials also say if residents find insects matching the description of the glassy-winged sharpshooter, they should avoid moving the plants to other locations and contact local agriculture authorities for guidance. Again, residents in Butte, Napa, and surrounding counties who bought grapevine plants from Costco during April or May are encouraged to inspect those plants carefully and report any concerns to their county agricultural commissioner's office. Officials hope early detection and community awareness can help stop the pest before it gains a stronger foothold in Northern California vineyards. This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News.
During tonight's episode of Butte Views and Beyond, KZFR programmer Ray Lager interviewed Chico News and Review's Jeff Von Kanel and KZFR general manager Grant Parks, who had a special announcement to make.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome Jeff Von Kanel, the founder, editor, chief bottle washer at the Chico News and Review for many years, and Grant Parks, our general manager, joining me tonight here on Butte Views and Beyond. Thank you guys for taking the time.
Hey, glad to be here, Ray.
Right back. Glad to be here.
Ditto here. And kind of got a big announcement to make. Grant, do you want to make the big announcement or shall I? Why don't you make it?
All right. Well, definitely. Once again, thanks for the time, Ray. Good to see you again, Jeff. The reason that we're all chatting today is that the 2026 Best of Chico is going to be operated by KZFR this year. In the past, it has been operated by our esteemed newspaper friend in media, the Chico News and Review. But, you know, we had some discussions and, you know, we think that KZFR would be a great organization to take over this Best of Chico campaign. As we are a community organization, you know, we've got the reach with being on the radio and doing our newsletters. And we think that a lot of the community, people who have participated in Best of Chico in the past, will continue to do so because, you know, we're hoping for a very, very seamless transition and, you know, an easy handoff. And, you know, KZFR is really thankful and grateful for the opportunity that the News and Review sort of thought of us to take this on. You know, they could have asked anybody, but they asked us. So we're grateful and we're excited for the opportunity to sort of bring this to the community.
Jeff, how many years has this been going on now? 47?
We've been doing this since 1985.
Oh.
I mean, we start off, I mean, the idea behind the best of is anyone that's lived in Chico has gone through Bidwell Park or toured the campus or hangs out downtown or saw some local bands, knows what a special place Chico is. And but that the specialness did not come by accident. It came about because tens of thousands of people put their love and passion into making a business or running their nonprofit or working in their band or et cetera, is the collective energy that made that possible. So what's always been so great about the best of is that we enable people to participate in that, to help explain to their neighbors other cool things to look at. And then at the end, develop a way to really send out a thank you and appreciation to all the people of Chico that have made it such a special place.
Yeah, very cool. And it's a, you know, it's a, as you know, it's a strong brand, and you see it all over town. Every day I see 10 Best of Chico things on doors and in businesses, on the back of trucks and, you know, billboards. It's everywhere.
Well, and then the other aspect that has astounded us is, as you know, when we stopped printing, we moved to online, is the participation. I mean, it's like, all right, last year alone, we generated over 2 million page views and over 230,000 votes. This is incredible.
I know.
We're in town with 100,000. We have the best of best of best of. I mean, it's like, it really shows Chico at its finest and in a way that then I think enables people to be involved and really celebrate. So that, we're delighted that you guys are going to be continuing it in a way that I think can make it stronger and make it continue.
This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News. The Butte County Board of Supervisors is set to consider an item focused on wildfire response and emergency coordination, specifically agreements between Butte County Fire Department, Pacific Gas and Electric Company, and California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, better known as CAL FIRE, involving helicopter wildfire suppression operations. This agenda item centers on cooperative agreements that would allow the agencies to work together more effectively during wildfire emergencies, especially during the peak fire season, when fast aerial response can make a major difference in stopping a fire before it grows out of control. Under the proposed agreements, Butte County Fire, PG&E, and CAL FIRE would coordinate access to helicopter resources and operational support during emergencies. Officials say the partnerships are intended to improve communication, streamline response efforts, and make sure agencies can quickly deploy aircraft when dangerous fire conditions develop. This agreement also reflects how wildfire preparedness has become a year-round issue rather than just a seasonal concern. Agencies now spend months planning mutual aid systems, staging equipment, coordinating evacuation planning, and strengthening communication between departments before fire season reaches its peak. At the Board of Supervisors meeting, Garrett Scholin, Fire Chief of Butte County, states that,
"Everybody, Garrett Scholin, Fire Chief, Butte County Fire Department, here today to present you our third year of wildfire support through an agreement with PG&E, as the chairman mentioned. A little bit of background on this. In 2024 and 25, the board both approved an agreement with PG&E to provide, at no cost to the county, a helicopter, its pilots, and its mechanical support. The length of this contract would be from June 15th through November 15th, covers 7 days a week, and this is daylight hours only, no night flying. The type of helicopter is a Sikorsky UH-60. We refer to as a Type 1 helicopter, very similar to the capabilities of that of CAL FIRE's, with a 1,000-gallon tank that it's on it. Just to recap, over the last 2 years, we've had a total of 84 flight hours. You can see those broken out over the last 2 years. Last year was a very mild fire season, and the incidents are including that it's been responded to here in Butte County, the Thompson Park and the Granite wildfires, with nearly 440,000 gallons of water delivered. A little bit about the plan. Its operational control is retained by the fire department. It'll be based out of the Chico Airport. It is dispatched by our command center, is controlled by our capabilities here in Butte County. It's available to respond to all of the local responsibility areas of the county, as well as the state responsibilities areas when it comes to wildland fire. It has the ability to support out of the county to our neighboring jurisdictions if there's a threat through the master mutual aid to no cost to the county. The state responsibility area fires, when CAL FIRE has a fire that is evolving, they have the ability to request the aircraft. It would not respond to federal agency requests directly. However, if the state was sending resources and requested, it could respond to federal land fires.
This item before supervisors is ultimately about preparation, making sure the agencies responsible for protecting Butte County residents have clear systems in place before the next major fire starts. This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News.
This is David Foose reporting for Zephyr News. California Governor Gavin Newsom declared May as Older Californians Month. He also declared May as Small Business Month. Butte County Superior Court Judge Tamara Mossberger denied a motion for a preliminary injunction in a lawsuit against Chico Mayor Casey Reynolds. The issue involved Reynolds voting against the downtown revitalization project rather than recusing herself because she owns Schubert's Ice Cream and Candy, which is within the boundaries of the project. Former Chico Mayor Ann Schwab and others had sued, claiming that Reynolds had a conflict of interest. Judge Mossberger ruled that financial impacts to Reynolds' business were speculative and that there would be no, quote, irreparable harm to the city if it missed its deadline for grant funding for the project. The city of Chico announced plans to clear homeless encampments from three areas: Bidwell Park from Annie's Glen to the intersection of Chico Canyon Road and Centennial Avenue, the northwest corner of Eaton Road and Cohasset Road, and Windchime Park. On June 2nd, the city will provide a 7-day notice of closure to people camping in those areas. Butte County Public Health announced that water and sediment samples collected on May 4th from several locations along Big Chico Creek did not detect E. coli O157 following laboratory testing by the state's Water Board's laboratory. Butte County Public Health announced that water and sediment samples collected on May 4th from several locations along Big Chico Creek did not detect E. coli O157 following laboratory testing by the State Water Board's laboratory. Butte County Public Health will continue consulting with the State Water Board in the coming weeks to determine whether additional sampling and testing will be needed. Zephyr News spoke to several individuals over the Memorial Day weekend who were upset that the Chico Area Recreation District, or CARD, had canceled all its adult summer softball leagues. As Nathan Chio Chios reported in his Chico Enterprise Record article of May 16th, the problem is larger than that. CARD has canceled all its outdoor adult sports leagues for this summer, not just softball. Erin Morrissey, CARD's director of recreation, said what she called a pause in services resulted from CARD being short-staffed. The individual who oversaw much of the adult outdoor leagues went on paternity leave and did not return. CARD was not prepared for that possibility, and new hires were not prepared to take over those responsibilities. Morrissey said that adult sports leagues will resume in the fall. The city of Chico announced the appointment of Wes Matroka as the city's new fire chief. Chief Matroka has 28 years of experience in fire service, including incident command, fire investigation, community risk reduction, hazardous materials response, peer support, training development, plus firefighter health and wellness. Butte County Treasurer Tax Collector Tony Kidd announced that the county has partnered with Easy Smart Pay, or ESP, to allow taxpayers to pay their property taxes with automated monthly installments. See the Butte County website for details. And finally, the town of Paradise announced that it has launched the Building Code Complaint and Corrective Action, or CAP, feedback form, giving residents a formal, structured pathway to submit building code complaints against contractors and share feedback about building division operations. The form is the direct result of a newly adopted ordinance establishing a formal building code complaint process, which grew out of an audit prompted by community concerns about permitting consistency and inspection reliability during the post-campfire rebuilding period. This has been David Foos for Zephyr News.
From KQED.
Some survivors of wildfires sparked by utility lines that occurred prior to the pandemic are still waiting to be made fully whole, but a new state bill aims to remedy that. AB 2700 would direct the California Public Utilities Commission to assess shortfalls in restitution for victims of the Tubbs, Camp, and Butte fires, among others, and to make recommendations for how to make up that shortfall without passing costs on to ratepayers. Republican Assemblymember James Gallagher is the bill's author.
Let's just do it. Compensate victims what they're owed. No more, no less, but what they're owed.
The bill would require the Utilities Commission to produce a report with concrete recommendations to cut kilowatt per hour electricity rates by at least 30% by January 1st, 2028.
This week, we've been taking a look at PG&E. Yesterday, we talked about the utility's efforts to keep its Diablo Canyon nuclear plant open. Today, we're looking at their political spending. Now, the top donor in California's wide-open primary for governor is Tom Steyer. The second largest donor? PG&E. KQED's politics correspondent Guy Marzorati has a look at how they're spending that money and why.
If you've watched TV in California in the last 6 months, you've probably seen a Tom Steyer for governor ad. But you may have also seen this.
But who's the real Tom Steyer?
A super PAC called California Is Not For Sale has been running ads against Steyer.
Now he's spending millions trying to buy the governor's office.
The top donor to California Is Not For Sale is another political group, Californians for Resilient and Affordable Energy. And that group's top donor is PG&E. The utility has contributed more against Steyer than they've ever spent on a governor's race.
And they clearly think it's worth $10 million as a bet to try and defeat me because they want to preserve their monopoly.
That's Steyer speaking a few weeks ago before a town hall in San Jose. And that PG&E spending is now over $12 million.
I've said that we are going to regulate them differently and introduce local competition.
Steyer has made reducing California's electricity rates, the second highest in the nation, a top campaign priority. His plan centers on appointing regulators to the California Public Utilities Commission, or CPUC, to do a couple things: scrutinize utility spending and cut their profits.
And it's not surprising, if you look at it that way, that the utilities are going all out to fight the candidates who are going to stop their gravy trains.
That's former CPUC President Loretta Lynch. She says PG&E, SoCal Edison, and San Diego Gas and Electric are currently authorized to return a roughly 10% profit to shareholders on their investments. Steyer has floated the idea of cutting that return by about 2 percentage points.
We could change this out-of-control, pro-utility, way-too-expensive system for the first time.
PG&E referred a request for an interview to the anti-Steyer super PAC. A spokesperson for the PAC says the group's opposition is bigger than any one policy, arguing the business groups behind the campaign don't think Steyer has the experience to run the state. Former Napa State Senator Bill Dodd spent years working on utility issues. He's been seeing Steyer's splashy ads promising to cut utility bills and wondering,
how the hell is he going to do that?
Dodd says Steyer can appoint new utility regulators, but those regulators have an independent mandate to balance ratepayer affordability with making sure utilities can attract investment.
I don't think it's as easy to get done as just, I'm going to replace everybody.
UC Berkeley's Meredith Fowley agrees that reducing electric rates will come with more complicated trade-offs. A large amount of utility spending has gone toward trimming trees and burying power lines to prevent wildfires. And lower-cost forms of wildfire prevention, like planned power outages, are disruptive to residents' lives.
If we decide to focus on reducing rates, I think we're going to have